a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, Internet listeners and committee members and guests. Remember to turn off your cell phones and ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representative Elliott, Hager, Hunt.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Killer. Lucas.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Perry.
Here.
Schaefer.
Stricker.
Here.
Talka.
Manaman.
Here.
Okay. Center. Sly.
Here.
And Brunner.
Here. And Hager's here.
Okay.
So we have a quorum?
Absolutely.
Thank you. A quorum is present. Let's deal with the minutes of the previous meeting.
Move approval.
Motion by Hunt, second by Vanneman. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Minutes are approved. Just by way of agenda today, this came together rather fast. Originally, I kind of had this scheduled for Friday, but Mike and I kind of crossed wires, and they're in town today for some other meetings. So with that, I would introduce Representative Mike Buckingham, former representative, used to sit on this committee when it was an old, shabby room, and we had to sit around and get coffee tables and pass legislation. But Mike, I'll turn it over to you. You can introduce your staff, and away we go. We've got about 40 minutes, and your presentation, and then some questions. So take it away.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. On the left side, now I hear an echo. On the left side of the slide, you see where we are currently expanding our programs, and these are programs that we currently have in our inventory. For example, we have a very successful vet tech program in Rapid City. That program just has a unique niche for the Rapid City market and the surrounding states. And then you can see the potential new programs that we are looking at and exploring, and either have started the accreditation process through the programmatic accreditors or are continuing to develop. And one of the ones that you'll see is that the institution will make a request to the Higher Learning Commission to change its relationship with the commission to begin a doctorate program. The first one that we will start will be a doctorate of management. One of the things that is looked at quite a bit by various state agencies and accrediting bodies is the course completion rate and also our term-to-term persistence. We're very proud of the fact that over 90% of our undergraduate students who pursue a course, start a course, finish the course. And also, we exceed all national bodies that are in our sector in terms of term-to-term persistence, which means the persistence that a student has to continue the education from one quarter to the next. This slide here just shows you, in terms of credit hours, the growth of the university starting in the summer of 2007 all the way to what our estimated winter quarter numbers will be, over 90,000 credit hours, what we anticipate at the end of this coming quarter. This is what the enrollment looks like in South Dakota. This includes our online, so you see the type of impact that the university has with South Dakota. We anticipate 160,000 credit hours in the state of South Dakota for our distance learning, which supports worldwide and also for our campuses. And you can see that the graduate continues to grow, almost doubling since 2007. Online growth, you can see online growth is now starting to exceed on-campus growth, which is interesting because that figure includes students who are taking a class online but also going to the campus to take a class. And that is sort of a hybrid trend that we're starting to see, and other institutions are starting to see as well. This is just showing the enrollment increase that I referenced earlier, year to year, to where we are last fall, at least, of 9,600 students. That has now, although I can't publish results now because it's not official, but over 10,000 students now. One of the things that we also watch very closely is the cohort default rate. This is the default on loans. National American University has always consistently been the lowest. You can see some of those for when it's reported for the last cohort in 2008 compared to other institutions in this particular sector. This is the what's called the 90-10 rule, which means that an institution can't accept more than 90% of Title IV funds. And you can see where while ours is trending upward because of the growth, the significant growth that we're having, we're still significantly below where we find that other institutions are starting to border the 90%. This is just a simple slide that shows the revenue for the NAU system. And two, actually, those numbers are reversed. You'll have to excuse me. 2009, the university had revenue of $62 million, and in 2010, revenue of $89 million. And then for this year, we anticipate well over $100 million in revenues. I bring this one up to show you the financial position of the university, which is extremely strong. The university has no debt. All the debt has been paid and paid off for several years now since we went public. And every bit of growth that I've shown you on the slide, we do through the operating revenue that's being brought into the system. But we also have plenty of working capital and cash equivalents that maintain a very strong financial position for the university. And then in South Dakota, you can see the revenue impact in this state, $30 million in revenue. You see the expenditures of $28 million because the expenditures are also include our central administration offices, which run the entire system. And so that's why the revenues look higher, but the expenses look higher. But you can see that the revenue that is brought into this state is around $30 million. And that's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and I apologize for the microphone.
I do, too.
Snafu. You know, the acoustics in this room are good enough that we all hear you just fine.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it didn't get over the Internet.
And my apologies. And I didn't have my glasses on, otherwise I could have seen the little sign here that instructed me on what to do.
I thank you very much for that. I know a lot of people, when I told him today that you were coming, well, why? And I said, listen, we're not just about public universities and public schools. You guys represent, today at least, a large portion of our education picture in South Dakota, the private universities. And you know, a lot of things we do affect you directly or indirectly. So I think it's very appropriate that this committee should learn a little bit more about what's going on in the private universities and have a chance to ask you some questions. Are there any questions from the Representative Perry?
Thank you.
This is interesting because last time Mike and Representative Perry talked, it was on the opposite sides of the table.
Yeah. This is going to be a whole lot more fun.
Take it easy.
The mic over.
I was just thinking I should leave now.
you do very nice work at American National and National American. Excuse me. There's something to be learned. The proprietary institutions in this country are doing things in how they deliver curriculum and teach. It's somewhat different from what the standard traditional liberal arts institution or public institution does. Help me understand what some of those things are. What can we learn about how you deliver your curriculum that would be important as we cut budgets 10% on the public institution side?
Yes, sir. Interesting enough, the CEO, Dr. Shape, and I just had lunch with the president, Warden, and President Schellenkamp from Black Hills State and from the South Dakota School of Mines, and we talked a little bit about online and the struggles that public institutions have in trying to create a model that works for them. First of all, our curriculum is based on a performance-based curricular philosophy. Some years ago, there was a program out of Wisconsin. It was called the Wisconsin Delivery System. WIDS was the name of it. Now it's called the Worldwide Instructional Design System. And that system really, the philosophy is that when a student is finished with a course, they should be able to demonstrate what they know and can do as a result of having gone through that course. And so we've been heavily engaged as a system in designing curriculum around that performance-based curricular philosophy. And we've been able to take that into the online environment as well through discussion postings, through other types of measurement of student learning outcomes, including rubrics. And it's taken us a while through trial and error where we feel we're very good at doing that now and actually serve as a platform for other higher education institutions to do that. And I think the struggle is in a public sector is faculty, because faculty are traditionalists and they have a hard time coming up with the idea that they can teach in an online environment. And I don't mean to make that a generalism, because it's not all faculty are that way. But when I talk to public university and college presidents, the struggle that they generally have is the idea that the faculty have that academic freedom to present their material in any way they wish, and our philosophy is a little bit different. We want all of our students, if they're taking accounting in Rapid City or whether they're taking accounting in Albuquerque, that they're able to demonstrate that they know and can use the skills that we've imparted through our online and through our on-ground environment. I hope that helps.
Go ahead.
I just want to follow that up and tease it down a bit so that it's pretty clear. My assumption is, and my understanding is, that what you do is you have a, for lack of a better word, a corporate structure in designing a course curriculum. And then you employ faculty who then deliver that curriculum for you.
Yes.
It's kind of the Phoenix model.
I'm not sure how Phoenix really does it. I can tell you how we do it. We have a system academics officer. I'm the chief academic officer. I use faculty to help design the curriculum. But when we design the curriculum, we design it and it goes through our faculty and assessment committee. So the faculty who are teaching the material are the one that I rely on to help design it, design the test instruments, design the curriculum itself. And then that is what's used across. And I think that's probably different than a more traditional model where a professor is given, can select the textbook, can select what parts of the textbook are going to be studied. With our curricular philosophy, we use the faculty, but we use the faculty more in a systematic way.
One more, just to take it one more step, just make sure I understand. So what you have is a curriculum that's been designed by this faculty group, and then if you're going to deliver it in Albuquerque and you're going to deliver it in Kansas City and in Rapid City, this is the curriculum that will be delivered, and if you're going to hire me to instruct it for you in Albuquerque, this is the course you expect me then to deliver and have assessed on. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, we're getting real close. Let's just assume that a course has 11 student learning outcomes that we want to impart on the student. At a minimum, that's what we do for all of our courses. As a faculty member, you would also have freedom, though, to use whatever examples or practice or whatever you want to bring in the skill set that you bring into the classroom. But at a minimum, these are the 11 student learning outcomes that we want to impart.
Other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Where are we at? Oh. When you use a microphone, I can't tell where the noise is coming from. Go ahead, Representative Schaefer.
Anyway, I was wondering, when you say you go public, I mean, you're traded on the board, and how does that interact with you as a college or a university? How do they work that, being sold, so to speak, on
Well, as the general counsel for the university and also for the public entity, I have a lot more involvement in it than, say, my associate provost. The structure is National American University Holdings is the umbrella company, the main company that is the one that's publicly traded. It has a board of directors like any public company would. Below that is a South Dakota corporation called Delore Incorporated. One of the assets of DeGlore Incorporated is National American University. From a governance perspective, the university administration, like me, reports to a president who also then reports to a board of governors, which is essentially a board of trustees, separate and apart from the board of directors. So all academic approvals, budget recommendations, when we review assessment outcomes with the board, that is through the Board of Governors. The Board of Directors can certainly listen in, but it's the Board of Trustees, essentially that Board of Governors, is the manner in which most of the administration addresses those types of governance issues.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask another question?
Sure.
How, the people that invest, that's what I'm curious about. The people that and they're investing money, right? And when you're traded, they're paying you money for stock.
Yes.
Well, explain that a little bit.
Well, there are. It is like any other company in terms of the value of the company is assessed throughout the market, and shares are purchased and sold. For example, one of our main investors is T. Rowe Price. So they buy stock on the public market, and so it's traditionally like you would expect a regularly traded company to be.
I'm curious, do you pay dividends?
Yes. The university is, since it's gone public, is a dividend paying. I just can't tell you what the percentages are. That's up to the board of directors.
May I ask another question?
Sure.
I'm very curious now, when you have a professor in Rapid City, do you put it on internet or whatever, and that's the course is also seen down there? I mean, do you use that, or do you have to have actually people in front of the room?
We do it a number of ways. One of the ways we do it is we record lectures, and so if a student misses in the online environment, we do it in a student delivery system, learning management system. It's recorded. If a student misses, can go back and they can hear lectures. We also do a lot of simulation, more so in like our nursing, where we actually do online simulations that students go through. Rather than practice on the provost, they actually get to practice on simulation units and learn how to draw blood off of the machinery rather than the faculty and the staff. So it's done in a number of combinations.
They finally got that.
Yeah. Well, they did practice on me early on.
Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Schaefer and I are both retired teachers, but he's a farmer, too, so he has more money to invest than I do.
I taught at Rapid City Central for a number of years.
I got a couple of questions. One is student activity clubs that you offer, and secondly, transfer of credits in and out with our regional universities. Is there any issues or problems with that?
Sure. So let me address the latter part first. The university is a member of the American Council on Education, is also a member of CHEA, which is the body that is recognized by the Department of Education to accredit accreditors. So the Higher Learning Commission of the North Central Association must be accredited by CHEA so that it can provide institutional accreditation to the university. CHEA and the American Council on Education and also ACRO, which is the national organization and association that deals with university registrars across the system. Our university is a member of all three organizations. In 2001, there was a joint statement that was issued by those three bodies giving institutions of higher learning guidance on transferability of credit. And there are three or four philosophical factors that once you are a member that you follow in terms of the transferability of credit. For example, equivalency and whether or not a course at another institution meets the kind of level of education and appropriateness for our institution. So Another way that institutions do that is through academic articulation agreements. We have a number of academic articulation agreements with universities and colleges where we've already studied their curriculum. And in general, the idea of transfer of credit is doing what's in the best interest of the student. So the student is transferring to our university or transfers from our institution to another institution. The idea is to make sure that the student will be successful, and that is the philosophy our university uses. In terms of student activities, our Rapid City campus is the lone residential campus and has the smorgasbord of student organizations that you can imagine. The university is also developing an online student commons that allows students to join clubs electronically and to interact, because we have students from all over the world. And so we want them to interact, and so we're in the development phase of a student commons. And some of the research suggests that if students on an online environment connect it with at least two other students, that the chances of them retaining and persisting through their higher education is much greater.
Sure.
Just to follow up, you know, with Western South Dakota and a number of Native American students, I guess in particular, do you offer anything unique to recruit or retain Native American students?
I tell you, we were in talks a year or so ago with one of the Native American colleges to take over a nursing program. It just didn't come to fruition. Our Rapid City campus has always had outreach programs. I can't name the particular club that's there, but we're an open enrollment institution, so the philosophy is open enrollment, but we also have mandatory testing and mandatory placement on academic skills, basic math skills, and English skills. The university also spends a lot of money in paying for developmental courses. That's a struggle in higher education, that students are coming into higher education and they aren't as prepared for academic study at the higher education level. And we offer two free developmental courses in both English and math to our students that the university pays for to help students get prepared for education at the higher level. So it's not just Native Americans, but as an open enrollment institution, we do that with a number of populations, including refugees who come over here and are either in the Minneapolis area or in Albuquerque. We try and work with all groups.
Representative Jones, did you have a question? We've got a couple minutes yet. So
yeah,
go ahead.
Thank you, Provost. You mentioned that your median age was 33 years, I believe.
Yes.
Can you give me a statistical chart as to why these people at this age are continuing or trying to further their education?
I think there's a significant trend in the United States. And in fact, the non-traditional, what we consider non-traditional population pursuing higher education has steadily increased. At one point, it was 20%+ of all students in higher education are non-traditional students, where they've stopped out for one reason or another to have family, or they've switched jobs and don't have the time, first generation. So there's a number of factors that we see, and students like the flexibility of being able to go to a higher education institution that understands the non-traditional nature of that student, and we do whatever we can to help that student persist through the university's retention activities. I think that trend for us is going down a little bit in age because of the nursing programs. We have 9 nursing programs now. And so we've actually seen a slight trending down on the average age, but we still see that in our business and other allied health programs.
One more?
Sure.
I'm trying to get at economic development is where I'm trying to go with this. How many of these students do you think are doing this because if they get a better or more education, their value or their salaries will go up? Do you have any statistics on that? Why they're doing that? Is there any number of those students that are doing it to try to better themselves?
Certainly. And I think with our when we look at our placement statistics, that's what we see, especially with the economic downturn starting in 2007, when there is such a shift in jobs. We even see that in the health sector, where you had somebody in a hospital system that was a radiology technician. They have nurses doing it now. And so they're cutting positions to economize. And what we see is folks coming back that were tooled at a two-year degree that now have to retool at a bachelor's or even at the master's level. So we do see that where there is a sector in higher education where folks are going back to advance in their careers and to enhance their earning power.
Thank you, Provost. Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah. But you guys will be around if somebody has a question.
Sure.
Certainly.
Yes.
Thank you very much for the information. It's we wish you luck and the rest of your meetings today, and also as you expand and grow. We're proud of you, what you're doing for South Dakota and for Rapid City in particular. So good luck with dealing with the city council and all that fun stuff that you do in Rapid City. But with that, if anybody has questions, I'm sure they'll stick around and please have private conversations. But our time is up. I see the Judiciary Committee is getting antsy and wanting to be here. So I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So
I have a motion by Perry, second by Vandeman. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. We are adjourned. Thank you.